All right, good evening everyone, the Guten Erev Shabbos. It's an incredible zuchus to be able to learn a little bit of Torah with you. I'm going to start with a little bit of a confession. There was a part of me that really thought that maybe by this week this whole thing would have straightened out and we would have been back in shul, and that the only time would have been the one and only virtual drasha that I would have had to have delivered. But we are in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's hands, and whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, of course, is good. So it's a great and incredible zechus to be able to be here with you this evening. I want to begin really by thanking the families who dedicated and sponsored all of the Shi'urim this week, to thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Nisan, all the various mishpachos, the Spector mishpacha, the Pollock mishpacha, for dedicating all the shiurim and drashos of this month, and to thank all of the families. It's been really overwhelming to see how many people have been sponsoring and dedicating shiurim, even during these challenging and difficult times. So I want to share with you something really amazing. There's a fascinating Gemara, and the Gemara says, records a machlokis, a Gemara Maseches Rosh Hashanah. And the Gemara discusses, when was the world created? So the Gemara goes ahead and records two different opinions. One opinion says, B'tishrei Nivra Olam, and one opinion says, B'nisan Nivra Olam. One opinion says that the world was created in Tishrei, and one says it was created in Nisan. So we're familiar with this machlokes. Of course, again, it appears that we side with the opinion that says that it was Tishrei, since, after all, again, we celebrate Rosh Hashanah we celebrate the New Year, we celebrate Rosh Hashanah in Tishrei. But there's this machlokes. And the truth is, over the years, much ink has been spilled trying to explain the exact nature of this dispute. What does it mean that they're arguing about when the world was created? And especially, it becomes so clear that obviously the world was created on Tishrei for a variety of different reasons. So I saw an incredible insight from the Avodas Yisrael. The Avodas Yisrael is the Kashnitzer Magid. And the Magid of Kashnitz writes as follows. I'm going to listen to these words. He says, Issa meha Ari, he quotes the Arizal, who says, Sheba Tishrei Nivra Ha'olam Bebechinas Herayom. So Tishrei, he describes, the world was created, but it was like a pregnancy. The world was created, but it's like a pregnancy. It'll make sense in just a moment. U'benisan nivra bebechinas leida. And in Nisan, ultimately, the world was birthed. So Tishrei was like a conception, the world was conceived, and Nisan, the world was birthed. But the Ari HaKadosh goes on, and he says so beautifully. He explains, V'ayinu, shebapol nivra olam b'tishrei, really, the world physically was created in Tishrei. Amnam tachlis habriya lo haya ela. So listen to what he says. The world was physically created in the month of Tishrei. But here was the incredible issue. The world was created, yet it wasn't immediately clear what the world was created for. So there's a beautiful, magnificent universe that's created in the month of Tishrei, but it's not immediately clear what is the tachlis. What is the purpose of creation? So when does the purpose of creation become known? So the Arizal writes, the purpose becomes known in the month of Nisan. Because what happened during this sacred month of Nisan, writes the Arizal, this sheyiskala malchuso, that the essence of creation, the essence of the entire world, is that man should come to know the greatness and monarchical identity of God. And when does God's monarchical identity become revealed? It becomes revealed in Nisan. Why in Nisan? Because when HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes us out of Mitzrayim, when God takes us out of Egypt, He demonstrated His mastery not only over the Jewish people, but He demonstrated His mastery over mankind. Remember, Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Exodus story, when we left Egypt, was the first time that humanity on large scale saw the Ribono Shel Olam. Right, for the thousands of years before Yitzias, before the Exodus, man had known about God, but man had never really seen God. Isn't this a fascinating point to contemplate? Avram Avinu knew HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yitzchak knew Him. Yaakov knew Him. The Shvatim knew Him. But at the end of the day, mankind en masse did not know God. So when was mankind introduced to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? It's by Pesach. By Nisan, That's when mankind sees the creative prowess of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's when mankind sees the incredible strength of the Ribono Shel Olam. So the Ari posits that in fact, the Gemara's two opinions are not contradicting each other at all. There's no machlokes, there's no dispute here. But rather, again, they are identifying two different aspects of creation. In Tishrei, the world was created. In Tishrei, the world comes into physical existence. But yet no one knew what was the purpose of this world. So when does the purpose become known? In the month of Nisan. And what's the purpose? The purpose is to recognize the greatness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Which is fascinating if we contemplate this for a moment. Because what the Arizal is teaching us is the entire essence of life is seeing God in everything around you. You know, I think many of us have had this like startling realization. I know I've been davening a lot outside, Baruch Hashem. But I've been davening outside a lot over the last couple of days. And, you know, if spring is coming, and it struck me that, you know, the flowers are beginning to blossom, nature's beginning to really come back into bloom. And it's such an incredible dichotomy, like almost such an incredible disconnect. On one hand, there's so much challenge and so much difficulty in the world. And yet nature is here. The flowers are coming up. Things are beginning to blossom. And it's almost as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending us a little message. I'm here. You think all of this is happening and you're asking, where am I? You think all of this is happening and maybe this represents my absence or the fact that I'm not around. And comes along HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and what does he do? The flowers sprout up. The trees are beginning to blossom. The air is becoming a little bit warmer. So the Arizal says the entire essence of life, the entire purpose of creation is to see the Ribono Shel Olam in this world. That is the entire purpose of all of creation. So Tishrei, the world is physically created, but we don't know what it's for. Nisan comes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu reveals his identity to mankind, and suddenly we discover that the entire tachlis, the entire purpose of creation, is for us to be able to see HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But perhaps you could also look at the Arizal a little bit differently. Taking this model that Nisan is the physical creation, Tishrei is the physical creation, but Nisan is when we begin to understand the purpose of creation. Perhaps the idea is as follows. Nisan is the month where we left Mitzrayim. We left Egypt. And you know, in the Hasidic Sarm, Hasidic literature, there's an incredible amount of discussion around the word Mitzrayim. Because Mitzrayim could also be vocalized as Meitzarim, narrow straits. And in Hasidic literature, there's an explanation that why is it that we place so much emphasis on the Exodus? Why is it that we place so much emphasis on Yetzias Mitzrayim? And so many of the Rebbes of yesteryear explain, because Yetzias Mitzrayim is a paradigm for life. Chayiv Adam Liros Es Asmo Ki'ilu Hu Yatsa MiMitzrayim. A person is obligated to see himself as if he left Egypt. And many of us struggle with that. What does that mean? But there's a deeper understanding. A person is obligated to see himself as if he left not just Mitzrayim, but Meitzarim, the narrow straits. You see, my friends, all of us have our own Mitzrayim. We all have narrow straits of life. We all have challenges. We all have difficulties. Whether it's difficulties in relationships, whether it's difficulties with our health, whether it's difficulties with parnasa, whether it's difficulties in what we see in the world, we all have Meitzarim. We all have narrow straits. We all have difficulties. We all have a Mitzrayim in life. So therefore, what is our obligation? The mission of man in this world is to leave your narrow straits. You know what happens sometimes in life? People find themselves in their personal Mitzrayim. They find themselves in their personal Egypt. They find themselves in their personal narrow straits and they can't get out of it. They just simply can't extract themselves. They get stuck in the narrow straits and there's nowhere for them to go. And they spend their life in Mitzrayim. They spend their life in the narrow straits. So perhaps we could borrow the idea of the Arizal and adapt it just a little bit. It is true. In Tishrei, the world was created. And when the world was created, man had absolutely no idea why we were here. When does our purpose become clear? Only in Nisan. What's the tachlis? What's the purpose? What's our mission in life? to leave your Mitzrayim, to leave your narrow straits. Don't spend an eternity in your difficult circumstances. Don't spend an eternity dwelling in your challenges. Find a way to experience your Yetzias Mitzrayim. Find a way to extricate yourself from the things which seek to hold you back. But of course, the million-dollar question is, how? Beautiful. So Tishrei, the world was created. Nisan, I now understand the purpose of creation. The purpose of creation is to leave my Mitzrayim. Who doesn't want to leave their Mitzrayim? Everybody wants to leave their difficult circumstances. But of course, the question now becomes, how do I do it? And while there's not one answer for this particular question, it struck me that there is a very profound insight in this week's parasha. Chumash Vayikra begins, and the truth is, you know, the beginning of Vayikra is often met with mixed emotions. For some, Baruch Hashem, we're moving on in the Torah. For others, now, mamish, the stories are literally all done. Bereishis is over, Shmos is over, and so much of Vayikra is really technical, sacrificial law. But embedded in these incredibly detailed, mechanistic ideas are incredible life yisodos, incredible life principles. So the Torah says, this is in Perek Beis, Pasuk Yud Gimel, chapter 2, verse 13. The Torah, in the midst of telling us all about the various karbanos, writes, V'chol karban minchascha b'melech timlach. You have to salt every mincha. Now here, we're still talking about a mincha. A mincha is a meal offering, right? So remember again, there are different types of karbanos. Some karbanos ultimately are brought from animals. Other karbanos are brought meal offerings, flour, and the flour is prepared in a variety of different ways. Not our topic for tonight. But the Torah says, when you bring a karban mincha, you must make sure to add salt to your karban. You must add salt. So the Torah says no less than three times that you must go ahead and add melach. You must add salt to your karban. Three times. And by the way, this is not just by a karban mincha, right? This is not just by a meal offering. But in fact, it's any time you go ahead and you bring a karban, you must go ahead and add salt. And if you fail to add salt, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Masa Karbanos, if you fail to add salt, the karban itself is fundamentally invalid. An offering offered up without salt is an invalid offering. The Torah highlighting the centrality of salt in the sacrificial service. Why is salt so central? So there are a variety of different opinions. Rashi explains, if you look at, well, I'm sorry, you don't have the source. Rashi says, on the Pasek, Shabis Krusa Lamelach Mesheshes Mebereshes. So we don't have to get into this now, but Rashi discusses this whole idea that putting salt on the Mizbeach maintains a certain sense of almost like universal equilibrium. There are things that exist in the celestial sphere. There are things that exist in the earthly sphere. Those things that are confined to the earthly sphere want more than anything to rise up. So salt is given an opportunity. The earthly waters are given an opportunity to rise up through the offering of salt on the Mizbeach. But Tosis and Brachas says something absolutely amazing. So Tosis, this is in Daf Mem Amad Aleph, page 40a, Tosis writes as follows. Ve'ein onerigilin lahavi ala shulchan lo melach v'lo liftan. Just to give you a little bit of context, so the Gemara is talking about the concept of interrupting between brachos and eating. So this actually is a halacha that plays out in many different homes over the course of Shabbos, which is what happens. You're sitting down to hamotzi, and somebody forgot to bring the salt. So you know what usually unfolds in most homes in that moment? A dramatic game of charades, right? Somebody starts going like this, then somebody goes like this because they don't know what you're talking about. You start mouthing or miming words. No one knows what's going on. So just as an aside, the halacha is you could actually say salt. You could say salt. Mishnah Berurah says you should say melach. Say you should go ahead and you should say it in Hebrew. Say salt. But you could say it. So the Gemara is talking about what constitutes an interruption between the bracha and consumption. So Tosis just says, by the way, today we don't keep salt on the table during our meal. Lo melach v'lo liftan. Mishum depas shalanu chashuv. Vahari hu kiyad arm b'samuch. Less than tzar b'shash. So Tosis says that it used to be in the times of the Talmud, they would go ahead and keep salt on the table. Why? Because their bread was bland. And because the bread was bland, there's an idea that you should make a bracha on a tasty piece of bread. So they would always keep salt on the table to make the piece of bread tasty. Says Tosas, today our bread is very nicely flavored. Therefore, thank you, Josh. Thank you. Right. Therefore, we have visual aids as well. So therefore, again, there's no obligation to go ahead and bring salt to the table. But Tosas goes on and he says something amazing. Mihu, Rabbi Menachem hayimedaktik ma'od lahavi melech ala shulchan. Rabbi Menachem, whoever Rabbi Menachem was very careful to always keep salt on the table. Why was he careful to always keep salt on the table? Kedi'isa b'medrash, because he used to quote a medrash. And the medrash writes, my friends, listen to these words. Kishe Yisrael yoshin ala shulchan, umamtinin ze'edzeh, ad sheyitlu yedehen, vehin b'lo mitzvus, hasotan mekatreg aleihem. When Jews are sitting at the table, and they've already washed, and what happens again when some people wash? So it's very frustrating. That's why many of us always make sure to wash last. Because the worst thing that happens is what? You wash, and then what happens? You sit down, and suddenly again, everybody's talking about every single conversation under the sun. You're sitting there trying to not lose your temper, not get upset, or not get annoyed. So what happens? So Menachem says, but there's a problem. You're sitting at the table, you're waiting, you're quiet, you're silent, and you're not performing any mitzvahs. You're not actively engaged in anything. And in that moment, the Satan, the prosecuting angel, opens up a case against me in the Beis Din Shemah, the heavenly court, and says, look, this person is sitting at the table, and he's not doing anything. He's without mitzvahs. He's without dynamic activity. But therefore, the Medrash says, don't worry, ubris melach magin aleihem. Keep the salt on the table, and the salt will protect you. The covenant of salt will protect you. So Rabbi Menachem therefore says, even though technically speaking, I don't need to go ahead and have salt in order to make the piece of bread tasty, because the bread is tasty by itself, nevertheless, I keep the salt on the table because the covenant of salt protects me when there are no other mitzvos to be had. The question is obvious. First of all, what does it mean? What is the covenant of salt? I understand the Torah tells me that I have to put salt on my karbanos, but what is the covenant? What is the deeper essence of this covenant? And furthermore, again, how does this covenant protect me in some dramatic way? So to appreciate this, we're going to go a little bit further back. In one of the dramatic stories in Sefer Bereishis, the Torah tells us how HaKadosh Baruch Hu planned to destroy the city of stone. But in the merit of Avram Avinu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided to go ahead and rescue Avram's nephew Lot together with Lot's family. So the Torah tells us how the Malachim go. Again, we don't have to go through the whole story, but you know the story. The Malachim finally convinced Lot and his wife to get their stuff together and it's time to go. So finally, again, they're going, Lot, his wife, and two daughters. And the Malachim have but one simple command. Don't look back. Don't look back. That's it. We're going to save you, even though you don't deserve it. You're being sinned in merit of Avraham Avinu. Don't look back. That's it. And what does the Torah say? So the Torah says in Bereishis, Perek Yotes, Pasuk Chof Vav, Vatabet Ishto Me'acharov, Vatihi Nitziv Melach. The wife of Lot, Medrash gives us her name is Iris. Iris looks back, and she becomes a pillar of salt. So the Lulav of the Rebbe says, why did she become a pillar of salt? Right? You want to tell me she dies? Okay. You want to tell me that she's punished in some way, she disobeyed the angel? Fine. Why a pillar of salt? And the Lulav of the Rebbe says something so profound. He said what the Malach was telling Lot and his family was, if you want to be saved from stone, you have to cut your ties with stone. If you want to be saved from the depravity of stone, you have to literally sever your connection and move forward. Don't look back was a way of saying you need to build your life going forward and you must sever your ties with the past. When the wife of Lot looks back, the way Chazal understands her looking back is she was looking back longingly at that life she had and wishing that she could perpetuate it. She didn't understand that she was given a brand new opportunity to start anew, that she was given an opportunity to rebuild herself, that the life she had led was incorrect and flawed. And instead, she looks back longingly. I wish I could have that. So she turns into a pillar of salt. Why, says the Lulav of the Rebbe? Because what does salt do? Salt is the ultimate preservative. When you salt something, it remains as is. The sin of Eshes Lot is that she was unwilling to evolve. She was unwilling to move forward. She was unwilling to grow. She was unwilling to progress. She was unwilling to change. So even though she's being offered salvation, she's being offered a brand new opportunity at life, she's being offered a brand new beginning, all she wants is stone. All she wants is where she was and what she was. And so she turns into a pillar of salt, symbolizing her inability to grow, her inability to progress, her inability to evolve, her inability to advance. Salt preserves, but salt also prevents any new life from occurring. You know, many of us have had the opportunity to be in Eretz by the Yam HaMelech, by the Dead Sea, and it's nice to float in it for a couple of minutes, very enjoyable, but there's something eerie when you're in a place that's lifeless, especially a body of water, which is normally an ecosystem for so many different types of life. And to be by a body of water that doesn't really support all that much life is a dramatic thing. That's what salt does. Salt preserves you where you are. Salt puts you into a holding pattern, and salt prevents you from growing or for evolving. Eshes Lot decides, even though I'm being given a new opportunity, I don't want it. I don't want it. And so she turns into a pillar of salt. But you know, in that story of Lot and his wife, there's another salt narrative as well. So Rashi says, remember, everybody's bothered by why does the wife of Lot turn into a pillar of salt? So Rashi comments, and Rashi says, "Vatinitziv melach, b'melach chata u'b'melach laksa." The wife of Lot sinned with salt, and therefore she's punished with salt. What does this mean? Amarla, so how did she go ahead and sin with salt? So Amarla, tinimat melech la'archim alal. Remember again, Lot brings home some guests. And what does he say to his wife? You know what, maybe we'll give them a little bit of salt with dinner. We'll give them a little bit of salt. So Amarla lo, so she said to him, af haminag haro hazeh atah bala hanig b'makob hazeh. So she says something amazing. It's bad enough that you brought home guests. Bad enough that I have to give them dinner. Now you want to give them salt? So Rashi says, because she sinned with salt, therefore what? Therefore, ultimately, again, she's punished by turning into a pillar of salt. So Rav Saratskin in Aznaim LaTorah explains, what does this mean? First of all, again, salt is generally so inexpensive, right? I understand if Lot would have said, you know what? Maybe we could give them some caviar. You know, maybe we could take out the 18-year-old Glenlivet. You know, maybe we could go ahead and share with them some of the delicacies. I could understand that she would have some pushback against that. But salt? Who cares if you give them salt? So Rav Suratskin, his Aznaim HaTorah, says something absolutely amazing. He says, I'm going to quote to you, She'eshes Lot lo ratzis Allah seis melech l'malachim. The wife of Lot did not want to give any salt to the guests. Why not? Ba'amra, shadai lahachiles ha'aniyim ad kedei lahashkit ra'avonam. Avalo laseis lahamelach hamosifa te'avam. Do you know what salt does? You all know this. What happens if you're hungry and you decide to go ahead and eat something salty? You take a bag of chips or something salty. What usually happens? So, in fact, salty items often increase one's appetite. They often don't satiate, but they increase one's appetite. Says the Aznaim HaTorah something amazing. The wife of Lot said, fine, I'll feed them. Okay, but no salt. Because if you give them salt, they're going to get hungrier. And if they get hungrier, they're going to want to eat more. They're going to want that. That was her objection to salt. So my friends, you see something amazing when it comes to salt. On one hand, we just saw before that salt is a preservative. Salt preserves things where it is. Salt stunts growth. Yet, salt at the same time also goes ahead and increases appetite. Salt stunts and prevents growth, yet at the same time, salt goes ahead and enhances and pushes one forward, in this case, to eat more, to consume more. Salt has its incredibly complicated and somewhat inherently contradictory identity. On one hand, it preserves and confines. On the other hand, it enhances and increases. And perhaps this is the deeper meaning of the Bris Melach. This is the deeper meaning, ultimately, of this salt covenant. My dear friends, what does salt ultimately teach us? Salt teaches us the need for consistency and growth. For consistency and growth. Salt teaches us consistency in that salt preserves what there is, right? So you take an item, you salt it, and it could last for a very long time. Salt teaches us consistency. But when you consume salt, you also want to eat more. You want to drink more. So salt teaches us growth. And perhaps this is the Bris Melach that the Torah is describing. When the Torah tells us, V'losash bris melach, Elokecha me'al mincha secha, what's the covenant of salt? You see, my friends, the covenant we make with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a two-pronged covenant. Here's the deal, God. You give me life. But again, like we said before, that's Tishrei. We have life, but now what do I do with it? So what do I do with it? Everything you need to know in life fits in a salt shaker. Everything you need to know in life fits in a salt shaker. You want to know what to do in life? Just look at your salt shaker. What do you have to do? Consistency and growth. I have to be consistent with the things I have taken on. You know, consistency is often one of the greatest challenges we encounter in life. We have moments of inspiration, moments of spiritual elation, moments of connectedness. And then the next morning I wake up, and the truth is, often I'm just not feeling it anymore. So much of life is being consistent. You have to be consistent in your relationships. How many times are people a good spouse on Sundays, Tuesdays, and alternate Fridays? That's not good enough to build a marriage. I have to be consistent in my marriage. I have to be consistent in my parenting. I have to be consistent with my chavirim if I want them to remain my friends. So soul teaches us the need to be consistent in the things you do in life. Whether it's Ben Adam Lamakom in my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or whether it's Ben Adam Lechavir in my relationship with my fellow man. But consistency is not enough. Because consistency could lead to a certain level of life flatlining. There also has to be growth. Every single day I have to ask myself, how am I better today than I was yesterday? And how am I going to be better tomorrow than I was today? This is the covenant of salt. And now we understand Rabbi Menachem. Rabbi Menachem said you should always keep salt on your table. Why? Because even if your bread is delicious and you don't need any kind of condiments or anything additional to add to it, what do you do when you're sitting there at the table? What do you do when you're sitting at the table? And everybody is carrying on in the kitchen, right? And they're talking about everything. And I'm sitting here at the table like a nachschlep. I'm just waiting for them to please saunter on in so we could actually eat something. And what should I do? I'm sitting at the table waiting patiently, waiting quietly. So what do I do? What mitzvahs do I have? So Sarah Menachem, it's no problem. You have the Bris Melach. Because my dear friends, in those moments of silence, in those moments when it's just me alone with my thoughts, I have to be thinking about salt. I have to be thinking about, number one, how could I be consistent in the things that I'm doing? And number two, how do I grow even just a little bit each and every day? And as long as a Jew is preoccupied with those thoughts of consistency and growth, then the Satan, the prosecuting angel, has absolutely no ability to say anything negative about me. So if we bring this all together, it turns out that it's true. In Tishrei, the world was created, but we didn't know why the world was created. Only comes Nisan, and finally again, the purpose of creation becomes clear. What's the purpose of creation? The purpose of creation is Yitzias Mitzrayim, to leave your Mitzrayim, to leave your Mitzrayim, to leave your narrow straits, to extricate yourself and to move yourself forward from the difficulties that seek to hold you back and tether you to your present. And how do you do that? How do you leave your Mitzrayim? How do you leave your narrow straits? Melach. Hey, my friends, it's all about the salt. I know that low salt diets might be all the craze. That's fine for your body. But for your soul, you always need a healthy dose of salt. Because the duality of salt teaches us this two-pronged message necessary to be successful in life and to move forward. Number one, always be consistent. Try to be consistent in your relationships with God and with your fellow man. But consistency is not enough. Consistency must always be also be accompanied by growth. How do I grow each and every day? Even if it's a small step, and even if no one else could see the growth, but I know the growth is happening, that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu asks of me. And I think this is especially relevant during these days. You know, my daughter showed me a, I don't know what they call it, a gif or a meme, whatever that, you know, like a thing on the, like an image. And I don't remember the exact lashon, but it was something to the effect of, you know, I think it's time for me to change out of my day pajamas into my night pajamas. You know, everything, our schedules have been upended. And many of us are working at home. Everything's happening at home. And just like day and night, everything is mixed up a little bit. And so, yeah, there are some people who stay in their pajamas the whole day and some people who disrupt their schedules. But the truth is, there's nothing worse than disrupting your schedule. There's nothing worse than disrupting your consistency. Life is success in life. Leaving Mitzrayim is all about consistency. Maintaining that consistency day in and day out. And even when so many things around us begin to change and so many things are no longer consistent, we have to identify the things in life that are important to maintain consistency with. Again, our relationships with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, our relationships with each other, our relationships with ourselves, to maintain a sense of consistency. And lest you think that in difficult times like we find ourselves now, that you're exempt from growth, the Bris Melech tells us that there is always a constant obligation for growth. No matter in good times or difficult times, the covenant of salt is always my guiding light. Consistency in the things that I'm doing, and an effort to grow and to conquer new vistas and accomplish new things each and every day. Al kol karban cha takriv melach. If you want to come closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you want to come closer to yourself, you want to find the real you, you want to leave your Mitzrayim, you want to give purpose to your life, just keep the salt in your pocket. Just keep the salt in your heart. Just keep the consistency and growth with you every step of the way. And we hope that Emirat Hashem, if we are truly able to take the covenant of salt with us, if we're able to take or keep the proverbial salt on the proverbial table and constantly look at it and grow from it, then we should be zoche Emirat Hashem to see the beautiful words of Chazal come to fruition. Benisan nigalo ubenisan asidan nigal. We were redeemed thousands of years ago in the month of Nisan, and we need a redemption again. You know, my friends, I say that phrase every year. Benisan nigalu, benisan asidin nigal. We redeemed the Nisan, we should be redeemed the Nisan again. And the truth is, whenever I've said that phrase in the past, it's always been messianically oriented for Geula, and it's still messianically oriented. But this month, we really feel it. We need a Geula. People are dying. Jews are dying. Mankind, right? Our Gentile brethren are dying. People are dying. And people are taking ill. And people are suffering. And people are having a difficult time. Thousands of years ago, when this month started, our people were also being persecuted. But it was exactly this time, thousands of years ago, where the seeds of Gula, the seeds of redemption, were beginning to sprout, were beginning to bud. And the beginning of our nationhood was becoming visible on the stage of mankind. We had Geula thousands of years ago. And I pray to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with all of my heart that we will once again experience a Geula this month as well. The Geula, the redemption of refuah, the redemption of healing, that this will be the month where HaKadosh Baruch Hu will cure this machala, cure this illness, and cure this virus that is afflicting every corner of the world. That the Rofei Kolbasser, he who heals all flesh, will see how much we need him, see how much are reaching out to him, see how much, like our ancestors in Egypt who were helpless, who could not go ahead and extricate themselves from the difficult circumstances, we could put in our effort, but at the same time, only HaKadosh Baruch Hu controls the microorganisms in this universe. And we daven and we pray that the same way we were redeemed from forces beyond our control thousands of years ago, that we will once again be redeemed from forces beyond our control now as well. But we never lose sight of our messianic hope as well. And at the same time that HaKadosh Baruch Hu cures us of the ills that are currently afflicting us, may this be the month that we experience Geula. Just as our ancestors were redeemed from Egypt so many generations ago, may this be the month where we are Zocha to be redeemed from our personal, national, global suffering. And may it be the month in which we are Zocha to be Mekabel l'Pnei Mashiach M'hira B'Yameinu. Amen. Wishing everyone a wonderful evening and a good and Erev Shabbos.